I need to start really manifesting Macho Man holiday.
Yeah, we need a revamp for Christmas.
Yeah.
Get on it.
Yeah.
I need to meditate 3 hours minimum each day until next Christmas.
Welcome to Beyond the Screams. My name is Steph, and I'm joined by my usual co-hosts, Holly and Patrick.
I hope everyone had a wonderful, wonderful holiday.
Yes, good tidings and all that jazz.
I hope the cheer was spread and people got gifts. Hope it was good.
On our last episode of Exploring Tulpas, we are going to discuss some holiday creatures / monsters and the festivals that manifested them into existence. We're going to focus on three regions, Scandinavia, Italy, and Germany / Austria. If you haven't listened to our previous episodes about tulpas, here is a friendly reminder from Wikipedia. A tulpa is a type of wheeled imaginary friend, which practitioners consider to be sentient and relatively autonomous. I would say that one of the most famous tulpas out there is Santa Claus. If you've ever dived into the manifestation of Santa Claus, you would find a whole world of other holiday entities that seem to be similar to Santa Claus, yet precede the jolly gift giver.
Yeah, from my research, it seems like all of these other Santa-like people and monsters or creatures all have a way more malicious tone to them.
Yeah.
And then the whole rise of we need to sell products with Santa came out, and they all kind of started changing a little bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, if anybody doesn't know, like, the Santa that we know now, and I'm sure, you know, the majority of us grew up with, is the Coca-Cola version of Santa.
Yep.
That was to sell more Coke, and that just became the face of marketing for Christmas.
I wonder why they made him obese. Was it just to show that, like, oh, I have whatever I want, you know?
The guy who painted Santa for Coca-Cola based Santa off of one of his friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because before that, there were a lot of variations on Saint Nick / Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why Santa wears red is because of Coca-Cola.
You know, I really hope his friend was just like embodied the Santa spirit, like just a very friendly, happy person that's like, you know, I want to go hang with him.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if his friend was Macho Man Randy Savage? How different Santa would be.
Talk about a monster. You know, this Santa created to sell product and is the epitome of consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to start my own tulpa tradition now every year where I'm going to just imagine Santa as Macho Man Randy Savage. And maybe one day it will come. Yes. True.
Yes. Oh,
your
man, Patrick.
Old Patrick just sitting by the fire, by the chimney, you know, just waiting to see Santa. Macho Man Randy Savage, I knew it.
I hear footsteps on the roof. I see some feet enter the fireplace, and out pops a head and just goes, oh, yeah, brother.
I hope by the end of this episode, you create a whole new holiday tradition. Because there's definitely some aspects of Saturnalia that you can incorporate that Macho Man would totally fit right in with.
Oh, okay. Let's make Macho Man holidays happen. I don't know what we would call that holiday yet, but it will develop slowly. It will happen.
Macho Christmas.
So we all come from a Christmas background.
Our celebratory background is in Christmas, but those traditions come from
Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yes, as it is written.
Because we all come from a Christmas background, a lot of what we're going to talk about is Christmas inspired. But we would love to hear from you or anyone about different holidays like Hanukkah, Ramadan, Kwanzaa, Festivus, you name it. and if there are similarities to what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, because these, a lot of the things that we did research on, they're like, you know, regional and cultural. Yeah, I'm curious to see if it's weird to say like mainstream religions. That's not right. Like
in religions.
I guess like the major religions. Like if you have a figure within those, like, you know, what is it? And then, you know, dive deep and like, where does that originate from? Or, you know, are you lucky enough to have like your origins still like passed down and it's still like that original thought?
Yeah, is there any like Hanukkah Dybbuks or like some Ramadan monsters or something like that? I don't see a Ramadan monster, but it would be cool.
Yeah.
So if there is one, share, please.
Yeah. Let's get into these monsters. And we're going to start with our Nordic friends.
So we're starting with Scandinavia or Nordic or whatever you want to call it.
Scandinavia, really, Patrick.
What do you want from me? I'm an American from Southern California. What do you want from me? I can barely speak English. Before we get into the creatures, let's talk briefly about Yule or Yuletide, the actual festival all this stems from. It's a festival historically observed by the Germanic people, which I found was interesting. The original celebration, Modrenit, if anybody wants to try to pronounce that.
Nope.
It's an old Germanic word, but it translates to Night of Mothers. It was an event held at what is now Christmas Eve by the Anglo-Saxon pagans, but it also has some roots and connections to the Wild Hunt and the god Odin, if anybody's into like the Norse mythology. From what I can tell, it was a sacrificial festival where they killed women. There is somewhat debate on that. Some people actually don't think it was, even though there's quite a bit of evidence that points in that direction. Eventually, though, the Christians took over and hell broke loose, and now we have the modern day Yule festival, which is Christmas. It's a little different than Christmas, to where they still celebrate and they get gifts and get the Christmas cheer and whatnot. They still have that, you know, capitalism aspect to it. But they still hold some of their traditions from the old pagan days, like the Yule log, the Yule goat, the Yule boar, which is just a dinner ham that they eat, and Yule singing. Those all come from old pagan traditions. Obviously, they have a modern twist on them now, but it's not really celebrated in the Germanic countries anymore. It's mainly celebrated in the Nordic countries like Norway, Iceland, Sweden. Very popular in Norway.
I also celebrate it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually really popular in Satanism too.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
From what I've seen in, yeah, like, Western tradition now, it's more of like a, you know, winter is over, we're going to celebrate, yeah, like the coming light and everything. So it's very interesting how things like change and evolve.
Yeah, it's less sacrificial and more, yeah, celebratory.
Wait, so Holly, you don't sacrifice anybody during your Yule celebrations?
I mean, I can't say it publicly, but let's keep it on the down low.
So how do you celebrate Yule, Holly?
When there isn't a pandemic going on, I would normally, you know, just have like a bunch of my friends over and, you know, like my chosen family. I like to turn off like all of the house lights and just have, you know, just like Christmas lights, like stuff that we, you know, I get a tree. We keep our tree lit. We string lights like around the house, keep all those on, fill the house with candles and everything. And, you know, appreciate the natural light that's going to be coming since the days are going to start getting longer and everything. And just, you know, like foods that are like very earth-based and bright. Like there's this really great soup. It's like tomatoes and orange juice and like other cool stuff in it. It's called a sun soup, and it's really like citrusy and delicious, and it's like this good burst of like fun flavors that you don't really get in the winter. So yeah, we like to do stuff like that.
But you still pull in, I guess, some modern day Christmas aspects to it as well.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, because I grew up with a traditional Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, you know, that all of what everybody is used to, a lot of it is incorporated into it too. So it's kind of like we get two holidays where, like, Yule is, we don't really focus on, like, the presents or anything or, like, gifts. We just focus on having our friends and family around. And then Christmas is like, okay, we can, like, do gift giving then.
I like how both center around, like, the Yule is, like, the coming sun, like, the mm-hmm. new sun's coming. You know, obviously the Christian anniversary is the virgin son is born. So right. the sun is
yeah,
coming.
Exactly.
So it's like
yeah,
very
the beam of light for humanity. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's no coincidence that Christmas is celebrated right around the winter solstice.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I say Yule is pretty much Christmas, but there is, it's more of just the celebratory aspect of it. They just celebrate it on the same days. Like the Yule doesn't even have, you know, in like some of the Scandinavian countries like Iceland, Santa's not a thing. They wrap their own old folklore into it, which is what we're going to get into now. Like Grilla, the Christmas child eater, which is just a crazy, crazy monster to tell your children about. She's considered the Christmas witch. She's an ogress who lives in a cave in Iceland's hinterlands and has a strange family of 13 Yule lads, which are her children, and the Yule cat, which I will not attempt the pronunciation of the real name.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, if you want to find out some more about the Yule Cat and you speak Icelandic, Bjork sings about it from a 1987 Christmas song called The Christmas Cat. So give it a
yes.
listen. We'll link it to our website. So she's described as an ogress with like horns coming out. She has a big tail that's like a whip. She has a sack and where she tosses bad children in, but also she's described as having like very long arms where she could just reach out of the shadows and grab children, which is very
Ooh,
scary.
That's so spooky.
It is.
Sometimes she's followed by a storm, which kind of comes back to, you know, last month we talked about a lot of Native American culture, and there's a lot of that aspect from Native American culture in a lot of these other folklores, too.
Mm-hmm.
She was also described originally with 300 heads and, like, 20 tails, which is very funny.
Were they, like, tiny heads?
The picture I saw, it had one big head and then just like many, many smaller heads descending okay. up from it. But the pictures of Grilla are fucking awesome. We'll post them on our website, but it's always her just devouring a child. It's very metal. They all come from the starting legend, and the legend has it that Grilla was once human, and her husband and her 13 kids lived deep in the woods. There was a bad storm one winter that kept them locked up and their supplies dwindled away. And with nothing else to eat, Grilla decided to kill her husband and toss his body parts into a stew and feed the children. From this evil act, they all transformed into what they were now, you know, the Yule lads becoming monstrous boys and Grilla becoming a ogress. So they lived a cursed life. But there's also some legends that say that this was God's first attempt at making humans, and that he still, like, loved her, but he had to banish her to the mountains of Iceland, where she lived and lived out her days. There's a very fun song that goes with her story. I could not find anyone singing it or reading a poem from it, so I have no idea how it's supposed to be read or said.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
I know. I can attempt, but I mean, it won't be good. Should I attempt it?
Do it in your best Bjork impression.
I don't think I get my voice high enough.
Out comes Grilla from the outer fields with 40 tails, a bag on her back, a knife in her hand, come to carve out the stomachs of the children who cry for meat during Lent.
What I got from that is never cry out for meat during Lent at all.
Oh my goodness.
But apparently when Grilla...
Does that tie into like you can't have meat on Fridays during Lent?
Oh, what do they call it? Good Fridays? Friday's a good Friday.
No, it's just during Lent. Good Friday is, I think, the last Friday
before
Easter. Yeah,
it's the Friday before Easter.
But like on every Friday, like you can't eat meat during Lent. And I was like, okay, cool. So I'm interested to see if like this has something to do with
It does, it's way before, you know, homeboy Jesus. But the idea, like in this line, it says she carves out the stomach of the children. Her sons, the Yule lads, which have just wild fucking names and do wild things, are like her little snitches, you know, There's one called The Window Peeper, where he just creeps outside windows and sometimes steals stuff from inside. But if he sees kids doing bad things, he obviously tells Gorilla, and she steals the child, chops it up, and makes a stew from him. I'm not going to read all the Yule lads' names, but I mean...
Oh my god, please, come on, they're so funny.
Come on, you don't have to... are really funny.
I can't believe these names are real.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I'm sure in their native tongue they sound way better, but...
Yeah, I don't have the actual Icelandic names of these. I took them out because there was no way I was going to be able to pronounce them, and I am sorry for any Icelandic listeners that I didn't even attempt. But you have, like, Candle Beggar, Meat Hook, Door Sniffer, which he has a huge nose and an appetite for stolen baked goods, which is just amazing.
Wait. Appetite for stolen baked goods. Does that mean the baked goods have to be stolen, or he has an appetite for stealing baked goods?
I want to say stealing, but I like the other version where he's like, yeah. This hasn't been stolen. No.
Oh, man, this was purchased. I can't have this.
Sausage Swiper. Scrog Gobbler. He eats up all the Icelandic yogurt. Door Slammer.
That just sounds like an angsty teen.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually going to say a lot of these names... I feel like would be something like an old Icelandic farmer's kid would be caught doing. And that's why these Yule lads have these names like, oh, you did this. The Door Slammer is going to come for you.
I wouldn't put it past Sydney to eat all of our yogurt. So because just saying.
The Yule lads are also known to take children, too. They don't also just tell Gorilla that, hey, you know, this kid's being a little jerk. They'll take kids with them. I don't want to ever be taken by bowl liquor. Like, he steals bowls of food from under the bed.
Or, I'm sorry, okay. Stubby.
Also, like, who keeps their bowls under their beds?
Oh, you guys don't have a bed bowl? We keep, like, days-old ice cream?
2 a.m. I wish I had something. Oh, my bed bowl!
Yeah.
Or Gullygawk? Who steals foam from buckets of cow milk? Like, I just want the foam for my cappuccino. No milk, just the foam.
Spoon liquor. I'm only here to lick the spoons. Nothing else.
You got a fork? I don't want it.
I'm going to see someone going around and just licking all the spoons and putting them back.
Stubby, he's short and steals food from frying pans. I mean, these names are wild for the Yule lads.
But they're so specific.
Very specific. Yeah. And, you know, Meat Hook, he's going to snatch up the meat that's left out, or smoked lamb that's, you know, being left out, which sounds just like a kid got hungry and went out and stole it.
Or, you know, you're drunk at a party and you're like, I'm going to kill the rest of this smoked lamb.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I know it's been hanging for weeks, but my mom's going to be pissed, but... I'll blame it on Meat Hook.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Fucking Meat Hook.
I don't know. These Yule lads, they all come back to some weird one-time rule, which I just feel comes from something a bad kid did that they're just like, well, you keep doing this, this thing's going to come for you. But I've also read accounts where there's not 13 Yule lads, there's 9 Yule lads. Or I've read that there's 99 Yule lads. So,
oh, goodness.
The most common account is the 13. These stories of the Yule lads and Gorilla and the Yule cat, who I just want to mention is just straight up American capitalism because it's to encourage children to work hard. Parents told the tale of the Yule cat saying that the Yule cat could tell who is a lazy child and would eat them. So that just sounds like cracking the whip, get back to the fields kind of thing to me. But also, you know, the Yule cat has many other origination stories and different things. But it just comes down to scaring children to do good. Just like, you know, if you get coal in your stocking or whatnot. The only difference is in Iceland, they truly believe in a lot of this stuff. I mean, a big population of Iceland, like over 50% believe elves are real and gnomes are real. So like they take this stuff serious to the point where a law was passed in like 1776 banning people to tell the gruesome story of Gorilla and the Yule lads, which then over the years turn the Yule lads into more of like a Santa-like creature who brings gifts.
Thanks, government.
Yeah. So they're like more like this whimsical commercial-like thing instead of, you know, spoon liquor.
Yeah, they did unfortunately kind of get the Santa Coca-Cola treatment where it had to be like cleaned up for the kids and like, don't scare them too much and oh no, they can't handle this.
But I mean, how scared were your kids that you had to pass a law?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's just wild to me. But the story of Grilla and her Yule lads are, it's a very fun read. You can definitely dive more deeply into it to find out some more information, but it is just a wild ride, and I wish we celebrated some, like, had more beliefs like this in the United States, because I don't want coal in my stocking. I want my intestines ripped out if I'm bad. That's what I want.
Yeah, I want a real threat.
Yeah, exactly. Coal, well, you're gonna keep me warm now, thanks. That's Icelandic Yule, or Icelandic Yuletide, and Grilla the monster. Or the ogress. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Check her out. Hit her up on Facebook. Since we kind of did a Germanic monster, let's go ahead and just keep with it and go straight to Germany and Austria.
I was looking at things from Germany and Austria, and one of the ones that stuck out to me, her name is Frau Perchta. If anybody has seen the movie Krampus, she is depicted, she's one of the toys that comes to attack everybody. She's like in the attic. She's the one that looks like the angel doll.
Terrifying.
I know, right? Like, oh God, the way that she looks. And now that I know more about her, I'm like, ooh, wait, now I like her. I'm interested. So she's a staple of the Alpine regions of southern Germany and Austria. She is usually depicted, she has like two ways of being depicted. She either is depicted like as an old crone, like she's dressed in rags, very dirty. She has a beaked nose made of iron, and like she walks around with a cane. But she doesn't mess around because she carries a long knife under her skirts. That's cool.
I like how it's a long knife, so it's like it takes longer to get out. Like,
I know,
it's just
right?
Not like a quick,
like,
it's like, oh, hold on.
Her other way of being described is as more of a beautiful woman, still wearing gowns, like dressed in white. If anybody has ever seen any pictures of, just talking about Yule, somebody dressed like all in white, usually like blonde hair, since, you know, Germany, Austria. And she's wearing like a crown, a wreath, and like candles on it, like going all around her head. That's supposed to be the other version of Frau Perchta, whose name is Holly, spelled H-O-L-L-E. She's a winter, seen more as a winter goddess whose name means shining or bright. So hence like all the candles and just being more brightly depicted.
That's just not fire safe to have candles in your hair.
That is true. Oh, did either of you grow up watching Arthur?
Yeah. The Aardvark?
Yeah. Do you remember the Arthur Christmas special?
No.
Oh, man, it's so good. It's one of my favorite episodes. And then they go through, like, because Francine is Jewish, and so they talk about Hanukkah. They talk about Christmas. One of his friends talks about Kwanzaa. One of his friends also talks about, like, Yule traditions. And they show, like, him walking down a street, like, in a parade, and they have the Yule goddess, Holly, there, and like she's walking with her like wreath of candles and everything. It's really cool.
How crazy would it be if they went in the opposite direction and did like the original Yule, right? Where they're just like sacrificing.
Ooh, Arthur's getting interesting this year.
She's on the parade with her knife just slashing kids. Right.
So her legend is, so back in the day, all of your flax had to be spun by Twelfth Night, which is January 6th, it's the last of the 12 days of Christmas. And this, Patrick, ties in with like the Yule lads and everything, because when I was reading about the Yule lads, they were saying like each day of the 12 days of Christmas, like one appears the next day, the next one appears and they stay for 12 nights. So January 6th is when the last Yule Lad, like, goes away. So you had to have all of your stuff spun by that time, because when the Christmas season is over, it was time to set up, like, the big upright loom and just, like, change things around and change what they're doing. So you had to have make sure that you had enough thread to begin all of your weaving. If you hadn't finished all of this, also, like, just generally, if your house is a mess, because Frau Perchta likes a very neat, tidy home. So if your house is a mess, like, after Christmas time, and you're not ready, if you're just lazy, she could trample or set fire to those lazily half-spun fibers that you were not taking care of.
She just bows and the flames just light it on fire.
Right? Or if you really, really irritate her, she'll come into your bedroom and disembowel you and replace your guts with rocks and straw.
Cute.
Mommy, right? You didn't clean the house. Mommy?
I know. I really need to introduce this to my kids. Get those toys cleaned up.
It's interesting because back in the day in, like, 17, 1800s, it was always the wife who had to, like, maintain the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
So was this just, like, a ploy to, like, make the women make sure the house was always tidy during this time?
Probably. I mean, because the women would do, like, all the weaving and, spinning and everything. So, I guess it's like, don't be lazy and, keep your house clean, because what else are you doing?
Yeah, what are the men doing? Why don't they get any negative things?
Right. Other legends of Frau Perchta, they associate her with the legend of the Wild Hunt, which, Patrick, you had mentioned. She's thought to fly through the sky with an army of lost souls and her Perchten, who look like Krampus. Like, they have the same horns, the same general depiction and everything. But what I was reading, it's like you only know if it's like Krampus or the Perchten through context. Like, do you see somebody around Christmas time, or do you see them, like, after Christmas, around the time of the, celebration of the Epiphany? Because that would be the Perchten.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's all timing.
Yeah. So the Wild Hunt, if anybody doesn't know, like Patrick said, it's Norse legend tradition. The Wild Hunt is said to pass through forests in, like, the coldest, stormiest time. Like, if there's a big storm coming up, like, the Wild Hunt is supposed to be happening. And anyone found outside during that time would be swept up into their hunting party. And this is funny, just, like, dropped miles from their original location. So I just imagine it like a video game. You just, like, go in the wrong warp point and you're like, oh, shit, now where the hell am I?
That's crazy. Just, like, looking through some other, I don't want to get too much into it, some other Christmas stories, most of them always had some sort of thing like the Wild Hunt. It wasn't the Wild Hunt, but it was always like a storm would follow, or a storm mm-hmm. They caught people in the storm, they were swept away.
Yeah, which is interesting because, as I understand it, like, that the myth of the Wild Hunt, it originated as, it depends on who they're talking about or, like, where you're from, like, but a god and goddess would come down, like, and visit people during a holy day, bring blessings, and they would take offerings from people. So it started out as, like, this really uplifting thing to look forward to, and then it just, like, devolved into something, like, menacing, like, don't be caught there, and, you could be, like, swept up in it. Yeah, it's very curious, like, how it changed from something so wonderful and, like, celebratory to something, like, where you need to feel like you're shut in and you need to hide yourself.
In these other celebrations, there's always such a huge layer of fear keeping people at bay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Law and order, man.
We need Robot Santa.
The other fun mythological creature I was looking into, if anybody are fans of The Office, the Belsnickel, made famous by Dwight. So, yes, he is a very real legend. He's a figure that comes from southwestern Germany. And from the immigrants who came over from Germany, Belsnickel is kept alive in the U.S., like mostly in the Pennsylvania Dutch communities, which is why Dwight in the office knew and celebrated. So like we were saying, you know, a lot of our other holiday friends, they come with a counterpart. Like you have the, you know, somebody who is like watching, maybe watching out for you, watching over you. And then you have like the mischief makers, somebody mm-hmm. who's going to make sure that you stay in line or make sure that you're being good. So Belsnickel, he goes solo, kind of like Santa, I guess, because with Santa, you get like, oh, if you're naughty, you get coal. Belsnickel also goes solo to find out who was naughty or nice. So he's kind of like Santa and Krampus, like in one. He dresses in like torn, dirty rags and like a whole bunch of animal furs. He's adorned with antlers and like a hat made out of other furs and like more antlers on there and just like other bits of nature to dress him up. And you know that he's at your house when you hear the tapping of the switches that he carries in his hand on your windows. He will come and quiz children and say, you know, like, have you been good? Have you been bad this year? What have you done? Like, what have you done that was good? What did you do that wasn't so good? If you're not able to convince him that you were good this year, then you get smacked with his handful of switches. If he deems that you have been good, then you get like little treats like candy, cake, like little things like that.
I was taught from a very young age, don't take candy from strangers. I'm not opening my window. I mean, this man is dressed in deer antlers and other animal furs, and he's tapping on my window at, God, probably 2 a.m. to give me, what, a Werther's original from his pocket? Nah, I'm leaving that window shut.
Do you know
and
what?
And he's walking around with switches? I mean...
So I think I would prefer this, though, because Santa, he's all like, ooh, you don't know. I'm going to be all secretive about it. Belsnickel comes to your house. He's like, hey, good or bad? Tell me now. Let's take care of this.
No, but yeah, he's tapping on the window. He's like, hey, you've been good or bad? Santa just stands over your bed while he eats cookies, staring at you.
Yeah, right? He knows when you've been sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Santa never sleeps.
Yeah, so it's a fun one. It's like a good mix of Santa and Krampus, because you get like the whole imagery of like being smacked with like his birch switches that he has, and like it seems like a fun in between.
Yeah.
And when I was reading up on it, like I saw cool pictures of just like festivals and stuff, and like people dressed up as Belsnickel and like going up to children and like handing out like little treats and everything
and hitting them with switches.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what makes me so mad. Looking through all this and seeing the festivals they have and the elaborate outfits, and then I'm like, Right. Oh, May Day Parade. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to put some fear into us again. And like, yeah. Oh, but this year, I went full, like, Victor, if you're not good, Krampus is coming for you. And he had a legit fear. And
hell,
I was,
yeah,
like, good job. Good job, me.
Now, next year, Alan has to dress up as Krampus.
Yes.
I mean, that may maybe wait till he's a little older.
or you could get a friend of yours to dress up as Belsnickel and tap on the window. Tap, 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 tap.
I have the perfect friend. He would willingly do this.
Yes. So moving down from Germany and Austria and booping over to Italy.
Our pasta brothers.
First, we have a really cute witch called La Befana. According to Wikipedia, La Befana is an old woman in Italian folklore who delivers gifts to children throughout Italy on Epiphany Eve, the night of January 5th, in a similar way to Saint Nicholas or Santa Claus. So again, bringing back that whole January 6th date of Epiphany, which I think is super interesting that all these cultures have different entities, but a lot of the same dates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think even Kwanzaa goes from the 26th to the 6th of January. like, which is a newer mm-hmm. holiday, pulling in the older kind of tradition to it.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah,
but we get the 2 days of the 24th and 25th.
Let's be serious, though. That week between Christmas and New Year's, that's a bullshit week. That doesn't exist.
Welcome to capitalism America, where it does.
A popular belief about La Befana is that her name derives from the Feast of Epiphany. In Italian, it's Festa dell'Epifania. Sorry for my poor Italian. Epiphania is a Latin word with Greek origins meaning manifestation of the divinity. Hey, Tolpa!
We see you.
The traditional Christmas holiday season in Italy lasts through Epiphany because, of course, holidays in Europe aren't merely a day or two. It's a week plus extravaganza.
Get it together, United States. Get
yeah.
it. Yeah. Seriously. Together. It's like, if you're gonna, like, I mean, people take off anyway, and the poor people who don't, it's like, why am I even here? Nobody's here because, hey, everybody else is visiting friends and family and, you know, seeing each other during this dark period of the year where it sucks.
Yeah. Or just taking a rest and relaxing before jumping into January.
Whoa, guys, the economy never rests.
The story of La Befana, the three wise men, aka the Magi, they were on their way to go see baby Jesus, and they stopped by her house because they needed directions. They spent the night because La Befana is super hospitable. She's like, come on in, let me like cook you some good food, let you chill.
She's in there making a nice pasta fagioli for everyone, just hanging out. I'm into it.
Exactly. Yeah. She's like,
let me just whip up some ravioli for you.
Yeah. She sees three people that are on a journey. She's like, come in, eat, stay here, relax, and then go tomorrow. They're like, you're awesome. You should come with us to go see this sweet little baby Jesus. And she's like, I got some errands to do. I got to clean my house. I don't have time to go on like a fun road trip right now. So the three wise men go. She's sitting there thinking, oh gosh, you know, I love a baby shower. I love kids. You know, let's be spontaneous. So she filled a basket with gifts, and like some of the legends differ, but I like the one where she gets there, but the party's already over. So she's like, oh, shoot, let me just give these presents to like all the other little kiddos in the area. So the legend continues that every Epiphany Eve, La Befana flies around the world on a broomstick and comes down chimneys to deliver candy and presents to children who have been good during the year, but leaves a lump of coal for the naughty kids. She's very similar to Santa Claus, or as they call him in Italy, Babbo Natale.
What?
Yeah, Babbo Natale.
Why do they call him that?
Because that's how they, I don't know.
I love it.
I do too.
Why are we so lame?
Yeah, we're so lame.
Why am I? Yeah, no, seriously. I'm not calling Santa Claus anymore. He's Babbo Natale. Yeah.
It was really good for her not to get to that baby shower because we all know Jesus and his followers burn witches at the stake. So she's very, very fortunate for not getting there on time.
Seriously.
That is true.
La Befana has been an Italian tradition since the 8th century and comes from Christian legend rather than pulp culture, aka Coca-Cola.
This episode sponsored by Pepsi.
La Befana is still celebrated throughout all of Italy with festivals that draw tens of thousands of Befana fans.
Are you kidding me? On the night of January 5th, I'm putting a bowl of raviolis out and waiting for La Befana to get to my fucking house.
Yeah, and apparently, like, in Italy, because, you know, all kids are, like, kind of naughty all year, they make a candy that...
Just yeah. the Italian ones.
Yeah.
They make a candy that's like black caramel or something that kind of looks like coal. So it's like, oh, you got coal. Just kidding, it's candy. Hey, Babbo Natale.
You know, those like little kitschy like point of sale little, like bullshit things that yeah. you can grab last minute. It's like, oh, a bag of like candy coal or like coal gum or something. It's like, ha, huh, look at that.
God, the Italians know how to do it. I'm not going to lie. Like, this sounds so fun.
Yeah. So La Befana wasn't really like a monster. She was kind of like a super cute grandma that was known for like cleaning things up and having a broom and like poking kids with brooms and stuff. She's like, yeah, don't see me. Boop, boop, boop.
I am very curious, though, how this survived for so long, especially with Catholicism being, you know, the heart of Italy. You know, Rome is the heart of Catholicism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea of a witch is like, was so wrong to them for fucking years that many people lost their lives, but Granny Witch can hang around and do her thing and they'll still celebrate it. It just kind of seems backwards.
It's the magic of the season, Patrick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
She was like burned at the stake. They thought she was a witch because she's like, I heard voices. The spirit talked to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, continuing on with Italy and specifically Rome, the next quote unquote monster we're going to talk about is the agriculture god Saturn and the Saturnalia festival. Saturnalia is like the precursor to Christmas. Before Christmas or Christianity was a thing, the Romans celebrated Saturnalia, which is a festival in honor of Saturn, the Roman god of agriculture and time. There is so much about Saturnalia. I am going to provide a very brief overview. If you're interested in learning more, please check out the Ancient History Fangirl podcast. It's all about Saturnalia, which we will link in our show notes. So Saturn, okay, we all know it's a planet. It rules the zodiac sign Capricorn, which Capricorn season begins on the winter solstice, December 21st/22nd. And Saturday is named after Saturn.
Best day of the week.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? End of the week.
Also, my favorite planet.
Oh. Yeah. Patrick is in his Saturn return right now.
What's good?
Not so fun, is it?
No.
No. Saturn is associated with the Greek god Cronus, the lord of the universe and the god who devoured his own children. What's up with these entities eating children?
I think it's like the ultimate kind of sin. Something you create, it is your blood of your blood, and then you devour it. So it's kind of like, in my eyes, like it would be an ultimate sin. You know, it'd be like my mom cooking me up and serving me with some fucking fettuccine. It's just not good. It would make her a bad person to do that. So I imagine like with gods, especially since like they're divine beings, their children would be divine beings, and you're eating something that could be essentially pure.
Hmm. Well, Cronus wanted to rule the universe, so he overthrew his father, Uranus. When Cronus had kids, he ended up eating them so they wouldn't overthrow him. So he ate his kids as a way of maintaining power.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Seriously, that's cutthroat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, the myth goes, his son Zeus escaped and became the chief Greek god. So back in ancient Roman times, Saturn was honored for helping folks with their agriculture and adopting a more civic and moral lifestyle. Saturn, being a Roman god, and as we all know, gods got their human sacrifices, Saturn got his fair share of human sacrifices, specifically uncovered heads. And apparently, the Saturnalia Fest kicked off with a big ol' human sacrifice at the Colosseum.
When you say big ol' human sacrifice, like, we talking like a few, we talking a few hundred, like how many we talking?
Saturnalia apparently was celebrated for hundreds of years. So the celebration varies depending on which ancient source you're getting references from, and who's providing those references as well, because apparently a lot of the ancient sources were all one percenters, and to them they were like, oh, everything's really awesome, which yeah. I'll get into. So as far as human sacrifices, I mean, some say they were dead gladiators, you know, they were already dead. Some academics refer to human sacrifice as ritual murders, because that's really what they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's like the best term for them. There are still some religions today that do practice ritual murders, and they usually, when I watch any like true crime shows, they do call them ritual murders.
Yeah.
So it's a good term.
Yeah.
Okay, so what the heck is Saturnalia? So at the end of the working season, when all the harvest has been harvested, it was time to party. Saturnalia was a mix of like a 1980s corporate holiday party, SantaCon, The Purge, and Opposite Day.
SantaCon hosts The Purge at Nakatomi Tower.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Everyone was off, schools were closed, businesses were closed, everyone gathered to eat, drink, gamble, pretty much do everything that they couldn't do during the year for like 3 to 7 days.
God, that sounds like a holiday party at my parents' house.
Yeah. Servants and slaves were served by their masters, and they could vent and tell their masters what they really thought.
Ooh.
God, that cannot be good for them. I mean, like, they're like, yeah, you can vent to me. You can vent to me. A week later, okay, what, they're going to remember all that.
They pull out a notebook. So remember when you said this?
Yeah, they're drinking too? Like, come on.
Yeah, it was ultimately a period of straight up chaos. And in many Roman households, a mock king was chosen, also known as the Lord of Misrule, to ultimately rule over the chaos. Some sources say like there was a mock king over all of the celebration or in individual Roman households. This mock king also created chaos, like insulting guests, wear crazy clothes, and make jokes.
This is now my favorite holiday.
Yeah. Patrick, I know.
I will never have another Christmas party.
I know. To become the mock king, there was a dice game or... Someone would hide coins, and my guess is whoever found the coins would become the Lord of Misrule.
So you're telling me I just need to win a back alley 7-Eleven dice game to become the Misrule King.
Yeah, yeah. Just imagine if, like, you, Patrick, got to spend the holidays with your whole family, and you and your siblings, especially JP, had to compete to become the Lord of Misrule.
I love this. I am going to introduce this to my family now.
And then for the rest of the holiday, you could seriously just fuck everything up. Just like hit plates out of people's hands, wear whatever you wanted to wear.
I have a feeling that this is somehow going to make its way into my life at some point. And the limited interaction that I have had with my birth family, I can absolutely see us doing this.
Yes.
It's amazing. Right?
I am going to introduce this to everyone. It won't even, like, I'm now throwing a Valentine's Day party with this, a St. Patrick's Day party with this. My birthday will revolve around this. This is going to be at every party.
but for your birthday, you're automatically the King of Misrule.
Yes, yes. But it can be taken away. Oh, this is great. I'm totally doing this for New Year's and Christmas now. I'm going to buy a cape, deck it out to what it needs to be, and a crown. This is amazing.
So this whole holiday was apparently a social experiment by the 1% people in charge to let everyone blow off steam. You know, everyone just like let loose, get it all out. End of the year. You know, we've been working really hard, but in a way, it also showed them that all the chaos and murder, because if people could just do whatever they want and the law, like the law of the time, they're like, I'm not working. People got murdered during this time. It was really similar to the Purge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine there was a lot of just very bad, like, atrocities during this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that in all the fun happenings, there were terrible, terrible things happening. So everybody who was, like, pretty much in charge was like, yeah, yeah, see? Go create chaos. And you're going to see how bad it really is. And it's, in a way, they got to maintain law and order afterwards because they're like, see? We need law and order. So who's the real monster here? The people letting loose or the ones in control?
Oh, the ones in control. Always the one in control.
Because
right?
The ones in control.
I mean, you give them a little taste and it's, quote, free reign.
Yep.
So of course it's going to be chaotic. Of course things are going to get out of hand and it's going to get to the point where it's like, oh no, we don't know what we're doing. We need the people in charge to help us. Because you give people such a small window to actually let loose and, you know, say the things that they want to and be who they are. Of course chaos is going
to
happen.
Like, the first thing that came to my mind if I was ever in the Roman times, like, it just happened to hop back there just for a day or so, and I was a slave and they let me just off the leash for a one day to go party, eat, and cause mischief, I'm murdering my master. No ifs, and or buts. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Honestly, probably a small percentage of people actually did cause chaos. Because that's what they were like. Oh, well, fuck it. We have one night to do this or two nights to do this. Let's just cause chaos. But I imagine there was probably some people who tried to, like, escape or just, like, do their own thing and not be bad.
Yeah, but even if you're a slave and you want to try and escape, then there's the issue of, like, well, what happens when this is over? Then what's going to happen to me? I'm sure fear and anger that came into people's minds, too, when it's coming closer to the end of this. It's like, oh, like, we were able to actually enjoy ourselves and feel like people. And now, you know, it's all going to change again and go back to, quote, normal. You know, that all of that is going to cause disruption and some kind of chaos, whether it be internal, external. And, you know, in that short amount of time, if you're in this chaotic mindset, you're going to say, okay, like, I need to step away from that now. So, okay, yes, take control back. Let me, that was too much for me. Because, I mean, even though they're given, like, quote, free reign, they really don't have it.
Yeah, exactly. Saturn as a planet is all about achievement through, like, restriction and focus and hard work.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of confused at first to read about this festival, which was like, all bets are off. Everyone's free to do whatever they want. But then learning that there was a manipulation behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like, LOL, you're not really free.
Right. Or the repercussions of, do people really want to hear what I have to say and what's going to happen when this time is over?
Yeah.
You just made me really depressed because it's just like, hey, we're giving you 2 days off for the holidays and then we go home and we party our fucking faces off and do it all nonsense, all hooligans things. Then we go back in the office. We're like, how was your weekend, Sandy? So yep. is it not the fucking same thing? Like,
yep.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Saturday is named after Saturn and Saturday's great, but then, you know, Sunday scaries are right there and that Monday morning meeting, it hits you.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you get that one day of freedom and it's like, "Yes, I feel like I can relax and do it." And then the next day it's like, "Oh shit, what have I done?"
All right. Saturnalia is known as, like, the precursor to Christmas. Why? Well, how did they celebrate Saturnalia? Well, first of all, wear the colors of the holiday, which are green and gold. Decorate your doors and windows and stairs with greenery and garlands and wreaths. Add gold cutouts of the sun or golden pie cones. You can also hang lights and sun symbols on your property, like your living trees. Make cookies in the shape of fertility symbols, suns and moons and stars. drink wine, have friends over for a party on the 17th. People also gave small presents, including foods and sweets and candles or lamps. And one of my favorite things about Saturnalia was the greeting, which was a cry of "Yo, Saturnalia!"
Hey, yo!
So if someone comes up, they're like, "Yo, Saturnalia!" You return with "Yo, Saturnalia!"
That's amazing.
By the way, add that to your list, Patrick.
Oh, yes. It's already added. God, it sounds so much better than Christmas. I mean, besides, you know, the bloodshed, obviously.
Yeah, right.
I want any of that.
Yeah. Saturnalia having its roots in ancient Rome, and eventually Christianity became the popular religion. Not to kind of get into this, but just a quick, like, oh, how did this evolve into Christmas? Some people say that to make Christmas popular, they use the same dates as Saturnalia, since they were like, hey, we're already celebrating during this time. Let's just like also celebrate Christmas during this time. And it's like, hey, come to this party. Hey, you know, celebrate with us. Don't celebrate with those like crazy folks over there.
Are you so you're telling me we went from "Yo, Saturnalia!" to
"Yep,
Merry Christmas."
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Happy holidays. It's Merry Christmas.
Yeah, so anytime someone wants to come at you and be like, "It's Merry Christmas," you should say, "It's Yo, yeah! Saturnalia." Yeah.
Chaos reigns, and then punch them in the face.
and then hit their drink out of their hand and then say, "Lord of Misrule rules."
That reminds me of just O'Doyle rules.
Yes. I know, right? It really seems like Catholics just made everything not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything that revolved around the idea of Catholicism and Christianity seems like they took out all the fun aspects of a lot of the holiday. It's yes, like, this is a time to reflect and self-flagellation. Those were some really fun holidays we went through.
Yeah, there are so many more out there.
Yeah.
Research, you know, your own cultural heritage, like look deeper into it than what you're used to and see if there's more to it.
And at this day and age, if you want to pick one that's you're not even German at all and you want to celebrate a Germanic holiday, just do it. Who cares?
Yeah,
just choose it.
It's not gonna hurt anybody as long as you have the knowledge and you know
you're respecting
like, what it means. Yeah, go for it.
If you want to follow any holiday that, you know, you may disembowel you, then yeah, go for it. Do it. Do your thing.
As we've wrapped about this month of December, manifest your own happiness or whatever that looks like.
I've been working on manifesting Christmas to revolve around Macho Man Randy Savage. And
oh,
I feel like
yes.
I'm getting closer and closer to it. I can hear the Macho Man whispering from the clouds down into my fireplace.
Soon, right outside your window and under your bed.
So, Patrick, after hearing all these holiday monsters and festivals, what does your Macho Man Randy Savage holiday look like?
Oh, easily. Saturnalia. Easily. Instead of green and gold, we're doing purple and gold. Obviously, everyone's wearing a cowboy hat with shades and a tank top. That has to happen. This manifestation's beginning.
My classic holiday cowboy hat.
Yes, yes.
It's been passed down through generations.
Imagine Macho Man Randy Savage coming into your house. He just looks at you and he's like, "I'm the Tower of Power, too sweet to be sour." Like, and just picks up your Christmas tree and throws it out the fucking door. Would that not be way better than Santa just be like, "Have you been a good boy or girl this year?"
Oh, yeah.
So Randy Savage is dressed similar to the Bell Snickle, but his fur hole getup is actually like purple leopard.
Oh, my goodness.
And instead of rapping on the window, he just punches through it.
And then right before he leaves, he fucking throws a handful of Slim Jims at you. He's like, snap into a Slim Jim, and then fucking runs out the door. You dig?
Yes. Well, I hope y'all enjoyed our episode on holiday monsters and our month of rapping about tulpas and manifestations.
It was fun.
Yeah, lots of fun.
We will have more amazing content out next year.
And goodbye 2020.
Goodbye 2020. And
we're done with you.
Everyone, please have a great New Year's and be safe out there.
Yes, yeah, stay safe and healthy.
But we'll see everyone in the new year.
Happy
Macho Mania! Oh, yeah.
Stór, hún hlýst ekki hvaðan hann kom eða hvert hann fór hún gætti upp klikningnar sína brúandi báðar bæ það var ekki heiklum henn það forða í bæ kaffalli beinti sem brottar og bakinu drypa há hún klarnar á loðinni löfa ljóðar sjá smá, þau höfðu að fá sína fík, fullorðnu hjá, og kvittar á jól.